everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm thrilled to be here with you today. I have a wonderful show planned. I have three guests joining us today from the Socially Responsible Agricultural Project. And this is a wonderful, wonderful nonprofit organization really trying to support the small farmer from the problems and the degradation that factory farms have on their communities and environments. So I'm thrilled to have both Ashlyn Bushick, Kendra Kimbarakis, and Terry Spence with us. So I'll be inviting them on in a little bit to talk more about the work of the Socially Responsible Agricultural Project. But first, I would like to just go over some of the things going on in and around the news, in the city, and share, of course, a recipe with you. So first, I just want to let those that are in the New York area know that tonight there is a really big rally going on that is very exciting, that's going on in the city. It is called Under One Sky New York, and it is a rally, a coming together that has been organized around the world. This rally started in Australia and has been traveling over the last day in cities around the world and culminating with the rally this evening at 6 o'clock in New York City. It's taking place at the Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza right near the United Nations on 47th Street. And it is a rally to raise awareness about poverty, immigration, inequality, and of course climate change. And right now, while all of these, these world leaders are meeting in the city at the United Nations to discuss these global issues, this is a huge project or a huge rally across the world to let our world leaders know that we really care about these issues and that they have to put these issues in the forefront of all of their planning. You know, if they don't address global warming and climate change, you know, everything else that we're fighting for is a moot issue, because climate change is real. It's here. It's affecting the fires out west. It's affecting the drought. It's affecting weather conditions everywhere. It's affecting our local farmers. It's affecting our food. It's affecting our health. Everything is connected to the climate change, and we really have to take it seriously and stop putting the profits of companies who do all this huge lobbying in the forefront. I mean, they should not have the power. They are not more important. And, you know, you read the New York Times saying, you read about Volkswagen changing, you know, being dishonest with their testing, emissions testing, and, you know, all for profit. And then you read about the Chinese, you know, producing plastic rice and selling that around the world. And, you know, and people get horrified, like, oh, look at what the Chinese are doing. But you have to realize that every business or the majority of businesses care more about the bottom line than they care about the people and the health of our population. That's just not their priority. Their priority is making profit for their shareholders, and that's what they care about. And so we really don't have the money to compete with them, but we do have the numbers of people, and that's why this rally coming together in New York City this evening is so important for people to show up and be there. Last year there was the People's Climate March, which was a huge, huge, over a million people in New York City that came out. I'd love to see that this one's as big. I don't know that it will be, but if you add up all the people around the world, I'm sure it is. But it's really important. That's going to be at 6 o'clock tonight. I'm planning on going. I hope I see some of you there. It's so easy for us to be apathetic when it comes to these issues and to just say, oh, it's too big an issue, and to not care and continue with our lives and stay in our little bubble. And for right now, our life might be okay, but think of our children's lives and our grandchildren's lives. They're not going to be okay if we don't pull in the reins and do something about this now. And, you know, as I, you know, look at things that I've put in the news and things for you to take action on. You know, it just reminds me how we take one step forward and one step back, and one step forward, one step back, and we don't really get anywhere. You know, we fought to get origin of labeling for meat onto our meat products, and sure enough, you know, the House of Representatives and the Senate are fighting to reverse that. Why? Because they have the Manufacturers Grocery Association and Monsanto and or the Grocery Manufacturers Association, Monsanto, Pepsi, Dow, Nestle, all of those people lobbying to reverse that bill. The meat industry is really big to reverse that bill. Of course, Monsanto's dream bill is passed the House and now is going into the Senate. And that's a bill that would make labeling GMOs, you know, the state mandates, illegal. Can you imagine? Illegal for a state to say, we want to know what is in our food. It's also being called the Dark Act. But there's all these things that are happening. And, you know, I grew up, I was apolitical. I really didn't want to be involved. And as I've gotten older, I realize that if we don't get involved, starting on a grassroots level and going bigger, these things are not going to change. We need to be relentless. We need to keep up the fight because these big corporations are, you know, keeping up their fight. You know, it's all about profit. And yet you can see that as we make our agenda known, companies, even these big companies, are starting to make change. I mean, I put in the news that you know, McCormick Spice is going organic. How cool is that, you know? And then you hear McDonald's is going to start having antibiotic-free and hormone-free meat. I don't know that I would trust that. I have to put that up front, but that's what they say. But just the fact that, you know, and, I mean, hundreds of McDonald's closed this year. I mean, that's a wonderful thing. So we have to keep up the pressure, keep up with our agenda, and keep spreading the word and try to get people involved. We need everybody to step up to the plate, to do their part, to let our world leaders know that these issues are really important to us and to the future of the planet. It's not just, you know, it's not just our opinion. These are facts that have been, you know, shown to us by scientist after scientist. It is the facts, and we cannot let profit take control. We really have to stand up for our rights. So with that said, I hope to see some of you today in the city this afternoon or this early evening. I will be there. Some other great things going on in and around the area. The Long Island Fair at Old Bethpage Village is happening starting this coming weekend. It's the oldest agricultural fair in the country. Taking place, like I said, at Old Bethpage Village this weekend and next weekend. You can go to their website, just Google the Long Island Fair, and you can find out all the different prices. It's very reasonable. It's great family outdoor fun. You know, everywhere from, you know, the giant pumpkin contest to the enormous turkey contest, candied apples, jugglers, music, games, hot air balloon rides. Really fun, and the weather should be great. So do come out for that. The North Shore Land Alliance, which is an organization that is really working hard to protect some of our open space here on Long Island, they are sponsoring a walk in the woods, accompanied walk with a naturalist at Sayville Grasslands in West Sayville. And that should be really great, talking about the local wildlife habitats that are there. There are benefits to both of our food and water supplies, so that should be really a wonderful walk. Long Island Naturally is having their annual event out at Manor Farm in Huntington also this weekend on September 26th, rain date September 27th, and it's a great event. You know, it's a community garage sale as well, so people can pay $20 and have a table and bring all of the contents of their garage. And so it's a great thrift store day as well. So it's a lot of fun if you can do that. September 27th is the Naval Expo in Manhattan. That's taking place at the Millennium Hotel. That's always a wonderful event. September 29th, there's a great event on climate justice on the road to Paris and beyond. And this is a presentation of women addressing the climate issue that's going to take place at the United Nations Church Center in Manhattan at 5 p.m. on the 29th, and it's free. It should be a really great panel there. What else is going on? October 3rd, the Harvest Fest up at Stone Barn Center in Tarrytown. That's always fun, from sheep shearing to, you know, a great market will be up there, festivities for the whole family, live music, should be great. That's the Harvest Fest, October 3rd. Also, October 3rd is the first annual East End Mushroom Company cook-off. That's taking place out at Macari Vineyards in Matatuck, and that's being organized by the East End Mushroom Company. So if you go to their website, you'll find out more information about that. Just Food, a wonderful nonprofit in the city, really working to bring farmers markets to less affluent neighborhoods. They're doing some really, really great work. They're having their main fundraiser on October 5th at the Metropolitan Pavilion. So you can go to their website, find out more information about that. October 6th, Enlightened Eaters with Marion Nessel. Marion Nessel is going to be talking about her new book. There will be snacks provided by the Natural Gourmet Institute, and that is also a free event from 5 to 7 on October 6th at 70 Washington Square South. And Slow Food New York City is the organizer for that. So if you go to their website or my website, you'll find out more information. October 6th, I'm participating in the New York Coalition's Healthy School Food Gala. This is an annual event here. Great chefs cook for healthy school food. The New York Coalition is responsible for the first two vegetarian schools right now that are taking place in Queens and are having great results. So they're doing wonderful work. I'm happy to be there every year supporting their work. So go to the New York Coalition of Healthy School Foods website for more information, or you can find out information on my website as well at ieatgreen.com. October 15th to 18th is the New York City Wine and Food Festival. Lots of great things going on. So I'm not going to go through all of them, but definitely check out my website for some of these great events, and I hope to see you at some of them. So I want to share a recipe with you. I made this yesterday for our Yom Kippur break fast. I also made it for a festival I went to this past weekend. It's a pear ginger chutney, and this time of year I'm always looking for creating pear recipes because I have a pear tree that just gives me so many pears. So this was really, really great. I used 16 cups of peeled diced pears, but they cook down a lot, so it's not that much. 16 cups of peeled diced pears, a half a cup of unsweetened organic pomegranate juice, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, a half a cup of ginger, grated, fresh ginger, grated, 1/4 teaspoon sea salt, 1/8 teaspoon ground cinnamon, 1/4 cup of honey, 1/2 teaspoon pepper, 1/2 teaspoon cumin, 1 teaspoon ground cardamom, 1/2 teaspoon of garam masala. Garam masala is a Indian spice. It's a mix of like cinnamon and cloves and cardamom. Really great. There's a variety of them, but just whatever you have in your cabinet will be fine. And then 1/2 cup of fresh cilantro, also known as fresh coriander or Chinese parsley, fresh cilantro. So you're going to start in a heavy saucepan. I'm going to combine the pears, the pomegranate juice, the lemon juice, the salt, ginger, cinnamon, honey, pepper, cumin, cardamom, and garam masala. Basically everything except for the fresh cilantro. And you're going to bring that to a boil and then reduce the heat and let it simmer for 30 minutes until the pears are soft. Now, let me just say that my pears are a variety of pears, and I'm not sure what variety, but they never really get soft unless you cook them. So I really have to cook mine for a while to get them soft. If you're using, a Diju or an Anjou pear, it will cook and get soft much quicker. But you're just going to cook them until they get soft. And then using an immersion blender, you're going to puree the chutney. You can either do it completely smooth or leave it chunky, whichever you prefer. Then add the cilantro and then just taste it. See if it needs a little bit more salt or if you want a little sweeter, depending on your pears. The sweetness will vary. And I used it as a condiment for samosas. I used it this week last night as a condiment for my potato pancakes. It's great, believe it or not, as a little side sauce for a macaroni and cheese dish, or you can just eat it alone like applesauce. It's really great. So enjoy, as always. I love feedback. So if you do make the recipe, go onto my website and let me know how you like it. Okay, and now it's my pleasure to introduce my guests. I have three guests with me today. Terry Spencer is one of the consultants for the Socially Responsible Agricultural Project, and Terry lives in Missouri. He is the owner of a livestock farm and has been working with the Socially Responsible Agricultural Project since it started. He's the president of the Citizens Legal Environmental Action Network and also the Family Farms for the Future. And he's been working with these environmental issues for a really, really long time, and he has a wealth of information. I'm really thrilled that he's going to be joining us. Ashlyn Bushick is a community organizer. She's actually Terry's granddaughter, and she has been raised in an environment that has been working on these issues her whole life. So she's really, really bringing so much passion to her work. And she is the community organizer for the Socially Responsible Agriculture Project. And then Kendra Kimberaukis is the chief executive officer of the Socially Responsible Agricultural Project. And she grew up also on a dairy farm and has been working with these issues for a really long time. And in 2006, she joined SRAP and became the CEO in 2012. So I'm thrilled to have all of them on. And first, I'm going to start with Kendra. Are you with me, Kendra?
I am. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Thanks for joining us. I wanted to just ask you to start by explaining to us really what is the work of the Socially Responsible Agricultural Project. What do you do?
Sure. Well, we call ourselves SRAP for short because our name's kind of long. But SRAP, we're a unique organization. We are basically a network of community organizers, lawyers, engineers, media consultants all across the country. And we basically work with communities who are on the front line of factory farm expansion. So that means that if there is a factory farm, and I'm talking a huge operation, so 80,000 hogs wants to come into a community, and the community says, no, this is not the type of agriculture that we want in our area, then they'll reach out to us, and we'll come in, and we'll do whatever we can to help them to stop the facility. Mm-hmm. And we're the only organization like us in the country. We do basically community triage, and we have a throw a spaghetti up against the wall approach to do what we can to help the community. And then sometimes we win, and a lot of times we don't win. And when we are unable to successfully stop a new operation, we then try to empower the community with tools so that they can protect themselves and hold the operation accountable to various environmental laws.
Mm-hmm. That must be a huge job, or I'm sure. I mean, those farms, factory farms, are just relentless, right, when it comes to that kind of thing.
Absolutely, and they have a lot of money, and they don't go to places where the people have a lot of money. That's part of their MO. And so when they do come to a community that is not well-to-do, the community has to really organize in order to be successful.
Uh-huh. And when did this organization get started?
Well, the organization was formed in 2007. So it was formed, by a board of directors at the time who represented the communities like the ones that we continually work with.
Uh-huh. So I had the date wrong when I said you came in 2006, obviously. When did you start with SRAP?
I started with SRAP when the organization started, which was 2007. I've been doing this work longer than since 2007, though. I've been working on factory farming issues since the early 2000s.
Uh-huh. Right. And Did you come from a community where you saw the impact of what these factory farms can do to a local community?
I did. I was raised in Michigan, and my dad was a dairy farmer. And I was basically, I witnessed firsthand in the 80s what happens when industrial farms come into an area and undermine the local producer's ability to compete. So we, our little community, we had probably about 12 independent dairy farmers, and pretty much all of them went out of business. And simultaneously, while the little guys are going out of business, the state of Michigan was going out and recruiting these huge, they were actually Dutch-owned at the time, massive dairy operations to come into our state. So I saw, you know, basically our local politicians let the little farmers go out of business, those farmers who were supporting a family, engaging with the community, who in most cases were multi-generational on their farm. The politicians let those folks go out of business while basically carving out new rules and exemptions so that these foreign-owned factory farms could come in and set up shop and drive down local milk prices even further.
Mm-hmm. Terry, are you with me?
Yes.
Hi, welcome.
It's a pleasure to be on your show this morning.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could share with my listeners just a little bit about, I know Kendra just said, you know, a factory farm of like 80,000 hogs. Can you talk a little bit more just what is a factory farm, or people know of the word CAFO? Can you tell us what that is?
Well, it's quite different from traditional farming, you know, where animals are free range and run out on pasture. The CAFOs, or factory farms, is a confinement building that where humongous amounts of animals are sealed up in a barn that never see daylight, never breathe clean air. They live their entire life there. I have a 80,000 head operation, a swine operation near my farm. That's where I began doing this in 1995. But and poultry, they can range all the way up to 350,000 layer hens in one building.
Oh my God.
So you know, it's not only, you know, the animal welfare, which is very concerning. It's also the concern for the air pollution that comes from these buildings, and then also, when you generate that much waste and stockpile it and then apply it on land or wherever, you know, there's great contamination to our water supply, our water supplies, our surface waters and underground. So, you know, it's really a big issue. And if this is the trend in agriculture to continue, our food system, I believe, is going to be greatly endangered.
Yeah. And Ashlyn, can you share with us, as the community organizer for the organization, the work that you do to get the word out there?
Sure. So as Kendra said, when a community has one of these facilities threatening their livelihood, honestly, their quality of life, they reach out to us, and we, depending on what state it is, we activate certain consultants, like Kendra said. Also, we're all over the nation, and really it's a team built up of people just like Grandpa and I who had had this happen to them. A CAFO moved in next door, and they had to figure out if they were just going to accept it or if they were going to fight it. And so these people have been doing this for years, so we just figure out, okay, what's the situation in this state and what's going to be the best plan of action to slow or hopefully even to keep this facility out of the area. So really that's just getting to know the people, getting to know what their goals are and what their hopes are for their community. Also, we really encourage them just to organize and to get a plan. We just give them the tools. We hand it over to them and say, this is up to you, and we let them run with it from there. I could defer any more of that to Grandpa or Kendra if they have any more input on that. I'm still pretty new, Bhavani.
What's that?
I said I'm still pretty new. I'm just learning the ropes from Grandpa.
Uh-huh. Kendra, Terry, either of you want to add anything?
I think Ashland pretty much covered it. You know, they have to, you know, carry the ball. We're there to help and provide, you know, expertise and technical advice, you know, if they decide to pursue and go on. That's always their choice.
Uh-huh. You know, there's a lot of people out there, and I'm sure you're aware of this, that think, you know, factory farms are the only way to address the growing population, that we wouldn't have enough food if it wasn't for factory farms. Terry, what do you say to that when someone says that?
Well, I hear that continuously in meetings I do across the country or in different states and stuff. You know, that's an ag commodity group's word of why, you know, we continue doing this. That is not so that, you know, when I just seen it, I was in Tucson, Arizona 2 weeks ago, and, you know, we talk about it has to be this way to feed the world. Well, I seen a poultry operation there in Tucson that the houses are eventually going to be 28 buildings that holds 350,000 birds each of layers. And at the end of 92 weeks, they gas them or enthanize them and run them through a shredder and put them in the manure pit to be to degrade themselves. So, you know, this is insanity. We have farmers all across this country and around the world that are waiting for an opportunity to, you know, get back into sustainable farmers, whether it's farming, whether it's 5 acres, 10 acres, 20 acres, 300 acres. You know, the economy is based in all of our local communities on family farmers on the land, not some corporation that, you know, has came in and run all the farmers out and now producing food in this type of system. It's not healthy. It's environmentally unsafe, and it's inhumane.
Yeah, and it's insane. Like you said, it's just insanity.
Yeah, and I would add to that, I think Terry explained that very well, and I would add that this myth that we have to have factory farms in order to feed the world is nothing more than a myth. And it's, you know, the people know how to feed themselves, and that's a reality. We have been feeding ourselves across this planet for a million years, and for this idea that in order to feed a growing population, we have to have these massive operations is a myth that's perpetuated, because if the people think that they can feed themselves, then the agribusiness companies go out of business. And I think we need to remember that.
Yeah. Well, also, you just see in the news that you can't trust the food coming out of these places, whether it's genetically modified, whether it's fed the hormones and the antibiotics, whether it's plastic rice. I mean, I just heard about the Chinese selling, I mean, the tons of this rice that contains 80% plastic. And people are eating this and thinking that they're eating, I mean, not that rice is the most nutritious thing to start with, but, you know, they're marketing it mostly to the Asian populations, Vietnam, Cambodia, China. And that's their staple diet. And they're eating rice that is not even rice. You know, and that's what at the beginning I was talking about. We do one step forward and, you know, one or two steps backwards. I mean, we keep undoing the laws that we create to protect ourselves. Can any of you speak to that?
I believe that's absolutely right. I mean, you know, pasture-based farms. I mean, I farmed all 68 years of my life. But, you know, cattle, swine, and poultry, they do not get sick when they're pasture-based, you know, and can get out on the planet Earth and roam and take in the advantages of it. But when they're confined, you know, the antibiotics and everything that's in there to keep them healthy. If you take a look at the FSIS, you know, the inspection on food, the recalls, We never seen this when I was growing up or all through the major part of my life until we got into these confinement situations, to where if you watch that regularly on the recalls, I mean, it's millions of pounds every week. It's salmonella, listeria, or something or another. And, you know, it's unheard of and uncalled for.
Right. Yeah, and that my understanding is because they're, you know, at least for cattle, their stomachs are not designed to digest corn and the grain that they're being fed, and so that's why they're getting the illnesses, and they're just not That's not how they're designed. And so they're causing the problem.
Exactly.
And then the other issue is, as you just mentioned, when the animals and livestock are out grazing, then they're helping to build up the soil and fertilize the soil. Now what happens is, as you know, with the factory farms, the degradation of the soil and then the problem of all the waste. What do most of these factory farms do with all of the waste? Can one of you talk to that?
Well, most of
sure.
it. Well, go ahead.
Go ahead, Jerry. I was going to say that basically what happens with, you know, when you take animals from the land, you're not only confining the animals, but you're concentrating their waste. And so you have to have a place to put that waste. So they bring the animals in these buildings, and then they'll take clean water and they'll flush the liquefied manure and urine into giant pits. And sometimes those pits are under the barn, as is the case with hog operations, or sometimes those pits are called lagoons, and they're outside of the barn, and they're massive. They're not a lagoon like, you know, you and I would picture, with beautiful water with pretty girls swimming, right? Like, it's an open cesspit, and this is not only an open cesspit, but this manure sits and decomposes and releases toxic gases into the air, which are then harmful for anybody who breathes those gases, whether it's the workers or the neighbors and even the animals themselves. And so what the companies will then do is take that liquefied manure and they'll spread it onto neighboring croplands. And manure, when applied to crops at an agronomic rate, can be very beneficial to the crop. Crops need nutrients in order to grow. But when you over apply the manure, the crops can only utilize so much of it. And so the rest of the manure will run off and often get into waterways, into lakes, streams, and even subsurface waterways, which leads to contamination of groundwater. And when you're talking about rural areas, the majority of the people in a rural area get their water from wells. And so one of the things that we've seen across the country where you have large populations of these factory farms is that the neighboring communities who rely on wells for their rural drinking water, most of the time they can't even drink their own water. And there's a place in Wisconsin, Kewaunee County, Wisconsin, which is saturated with large dairies, that the public health officials have actually said, not only should you not be drinking this water or cooking with it, but you probably shouldn't even be bathing in it because it's that polluted. So it is a real problem when you see it, when these factory farms over apply their waste onto neighboring fields. It affects everybody, not just the quality of the nutrient uptake of the plant, but the people that have to live and rely on the water there as well.
Oh, God. We're going to take a couple-minute break. When we come back, I want to actually talk about, you know, how you work and how you get into some of these factory farms to really know what's going on with some of the ag laws that are in place and some of the other issues that you're dealing with. So everybody listening, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with people from the Socially Responsible Agricultural Project, and you're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green, and we'll be right back.
It's not liberal, it's not conservative, it's progressive, the truth that empowers, right here on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Why would anyone ride on top of an elevator, lug around an 11-pound large print dictionary, or compete in a swim race unable to see the course? Well, this is me, and I've got some riveting experiences to share with you. Hey, I'm Mark Farrell. Join me for Insight, a new show coming to PRN.FM. It's about overcoming adversity, and who doesn't experience this in some capacity? I'm no doctor, but I'm an expert in me since I've been dealing with various forms of adverse conditions all my life, like having a rare visual disability that challenges much of what I do. Insight, real-life issues, including mental health, anxiety, depression, suicide, drugs, and alcohol. Celebrity guests will also reveal on Insight how they overcame adversity to make it, as well as your calls on challenges you struggle with. My difference makes me stronger. That's my mantra. Listen and discover how your difference makes you stronger. Insight, Thursdays at 11 a.m. only on PRN.FM.
Gary Null's incisive documentary and informational films on today's most crucial issues have won dozens of international awards. As a free service to listeners, acclaimed films such as War on Health and Seeds of Death are available to watch in their entirety online. Just go to YouTube and search for Gary Null. Thank you for your continued support. You're listening to PRN, number one for progressive minds.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm here with Terry Spence, Ashlyn Bushick, and Kendra Kimberaukas talking about the Socially Responsible Agricultural Project and the work that this wonderful nonprofit does. Are you with me, guys?
Yes.
Great.
Yep.
I wanted to know how some of the, you know, in order to do your work, you need to really know, obviously, what's going on inside of these factory farms. And with the new laws, the gag laws, as we hear about them, how do you get inside to really know the abuses going on?
Well, this is Terry. Most of my education came on early. I was in the operation near my farm. I was tied up in litigation for 18 years through the county level, the state court of appeals, and a federal lawsuit. So, you know, through those 18 years, I learned the ins and outs of what goes on inside the swine facilities. You know, that was my basic learning when reviewing documents and sitting across the table from the corporations and stuff, that I really, you know, got a sense of how it operates. We're still in a federal consent decree with this company, which is now China-owned. But, you know, that's where my knowledge came from. And through the years, probably the last couple of decades or a little further on, industry has really lobbied our state legislatures and our Congress and to wine and dine them to get everything that they wished for a clear playing field. And most states, local control, which is very beneficial to local communities, you know, to where local government can, you know, decide what they want. That has been stripped in most states. In Missouri, we've protected that for going on 12 or 13 years now, but they're going to eventually get it. And once local control is taken away, then, you know, it's a free rein for them where there's nothing that you can do to block any avenue. And the same as in the legislature, they're passing bills that gives them a freeway, you know, to build in anywhere they want to. So just in a brief, that's kind of how it operates.
Well, it sounds, from what you just said, like you think it's getting worse as opposed to the fight from your organization and the people getting stronger. Is that how you see it going? Do you think the factory farms are going to just keep growing, or is our pushback working?
I think, you know, they're here probably to stay, but I think, you know, even though that, you know, the real effects are beginning to show, you know, of what this industry is doing to rural communities, economically, environmentally, and all else. So, you know, the educational part, I think, is so key and important in working with all these local communities to let the let this, the legislatures, they, you know, they're elected, and to let them know that, you know, this is not going to be something for the future. We need sustainable family farms. And I think we're gaining ground between our organizing with rural communities, bringing them together as one across this nation, that, you know, we're all working on the same mode. And I think we're also gaining a lot of ground with consumers that are beginning to learn more about where their food is coming from and what's healthy and what's not healthy. So, you know, it's a big battle, but I'm in the ball game until the game's over, or until I'm not breathing anymore. So, you know, and I think people across this country feel just the same, that, you know, that we have to stand up. And I think that is what is so important. I mean, like Kendra said, we win battles, we lose battles, but we're showing people that, you know, we don't have to stand by and watch our small family farms and our organic things disappear or get destroyed just because of corporate industry.
Yeah. Well, that's something I talk to my listeners about all the time, to get involved and to really join these groups and sign the petitions and do what you can. Right now there's a petition just to continue with the country of origin labeling laws. I mean, you know, when I was talking about one step forward, two steps back, you know, we fought to have this law so that we knew where our meat was coming from, because, you know, most people still, I don't think, realize that when they eat a commercially produced hamburger, there could be 1,000 different cows coming from all over the world in that one hamburger.
Exactly.
You know, and that they don't know that. And, you know, that's what these labeling laws are for. And, you know, we pushed to get it on, and now they're pushing to undo it. And it's just infuriating. Yeah. And so I have a petition right now on my website asking people to please sign on to keep the country of origin labeling going. But, you know, as you were saying, it's such a problem, and I do see them continuously growing, and we need organizations like yours to really fight them back.
And
go ahead.
This is Kendra. I just wanted to jump in for a second because I think Carrie covered it very well. But it really is a mixed bag in this work. We are making. It's important to not lose sight of the fact that we are so much further along than we were 20 years ago. People are concerned with how their food is being produced. People want to know their family farmers. People don't want food that was raised in a factory farm setting, by and large. And the industry knows that. And so the industry is then changing the laws, making it harder for, one, communities to fight factory farms, like we've seen in like the egg gag laws that you mentioned, which basically prevent people from taking photos of animals in factory farms if the operator doesn't approve it. We're seeing them change the playing field at the federal level by changing some of the laws and the legislation that we've seen that would help people like the country of origin labeling to know, to have more transparency in their food system.
Or the GMO labeling.
The GMO labeling. And then at the international level, these companies are going out and they're, you know, our government is engaging in international trade deals, which will make it even easier for factory farms to be built to feed the export market. And so there is this, you know, disconnect there. People want good quality food and healthy food, but our elected officials are actively taking away the laws that are there to help with that transparency process. And I think it's really important for your listeners to know that what they are doing is working, but also remember that we have to kind of cut through the feel-good side of the good food movement and make sure we truly understand what's happening in rural America with these factory farms, because as long as there is that disconnect, by and large, we all lose, because factory farm production will continue, and as a result, our rural areas are going to continue to be polluted, and the food is going to be threatened.
Mm-hmm. You know, and people sometimes don't get involved until they see it hitting close to home, and so I just want to say it's not just the rural areas that are getting polluted. That infiltrates everywhere. I mean, you know,
exactly.
New York has farms, you know, and, you know, and the, we get our water from upstate and the, you know, the, you know, if the massive farms are polluting our water, it's coming into the city water too.
Yep.
You know, I know we've banned fracking in the state of New York, but, you know, right next door in Pennsylvania, they're fracking, and we're taking in their wastewater from the fracking, you know, and then they're spraying the fracking water on the roads for de-icing, and that's getting into our waterways. So I don't think any of us, if you really know what's going on, are safe, you know. So this disconnect and the benefits that big corporations are having by doing all the lobbying that they're doing and the Citizens United Act and all those things are, you know, just so terrible. And that's why, you know, I am constantly encouraging people to really educate themselves and really make those connections. And that's one of the reasons I love food, because it is connected to everything. You know, food connects us to our environment, our economy, our health. The environment, everything is connected through the food. So I get what, you know, I love what you guys are doing because it is so important. What is the Socially Responsible Agricultural Project doing as far as helping educate the consumer? Do you work in that area at all?
Ashlyn, do you want to take this one?
Ashlyn,
sure.
Still with us?
So basically when we go into these communities, like we said, we're giving them tools and we're kind of laying it all out for them. You know, a lot of times factory farm is now a known term. I don't think that was the case whenever Grandpa started and all of this 20 years ago. But for the most part, people know now. We have some, you know, some animal rights organizations that have kind of blown the truth out there for people. And so we approach them as consumers. You know, we try to educate them on all sides of what's going on in the factory farm, not just, okay, these are the technical ways that we're going to try to defeat it. And so a lot of times we have people in these groups who...
1-2-1-2-1-2 1-2-1-2-1-2
Hello? Someone, you're on our line. Go ahead, Ashlyn. Continue.
So a lot of times we'll have people in these groups that really take us the banner, and they become the advocate. They become the voice in the community of, hey, this is what's wrong in our food system. This is what these factory farms are doing to our communities and to our food system. And so really we are indirectly educating the consumer, I guess, because the people that we work with become so passionate about it that they actually become the voice.
Well, I shouldn't be hearing them.
We also, this is Terry again, we also do present at a lot of conferences across the country and also have our display. Made last week where we had a booth and had a tremendous tour of people coming through to take a look at the photos, the pictures, and, you know, talk with us about what's going on. So we do this on a pretty regular basis on displaying. I'm always amazed that, you know, at the people that shows up that knew nothing about it. But once they see and visit with us, they start to understand, you know, how bad the situation is. And most of all, I think the younger generation, the next generation, Ashland's group is the ones that's really coming on strong. I know I've presented in a few colleges and universities, and they understand it. And, you know, that's we're a generation of people that, you know, it's a busy day life, and we go on doing our thing. But I think, you know, talking to the next generation, educating them, bringing them on board, this is where it's going to come from, the children and grandchildren that follow. They understand the work that we're trying to do to preserve it, and I think the consumers are starting to learn that.
Yeah, I would agree with you. You know, and I think even as much as I don't love Walmart, and I touched on McDonald's earlier, you know, doing, you know, jumping on board with sustainable or organic, you know, sometimes you feel like when something becomes trendy, you know, these big corporations, you know, want a piece of the action. You know, they only want a piece of the action because it's good for their pockets. But I think, you know, like a organization like, or a corporation like Walmart, because they're bringing so much organics into their store, you know, on one hand, they are educating the consumer, but on the other hand, you know, they compete so, you know, and make such hardline deals with farmers that I can't imagine anybody really wanting to sell to them because it's hard to make a profit on that end. What is your opinion? And this could go to Kendra, I guess. What is your opinion on some of these big corporations coming in and, you know, at the same time, you know, making such tough deals?
Yeah, well, I think that's a great question. So absolutely, I agree with you 100%. I think that because we are seeing these giant companies and corporations move toward what was considered sort of a fringe portion of the consumer population, those people that wanted organic and healthy food, I think that that's a really powerful statement. But one of the things, and I think this is probably for another show, is that what we're seeing is that because these companies have moved into the market, they are trying to water down a lot of the rules around organics.
Absolutely,
so that they can be players, right? And so, for example, here in Oregon, we have the largest factory farm that's a dairy farm in the country. It's called Three Mile Canyon Farms, and it has 55,000 dairy cows with a permit to expand to 100,000 cows. It's a huge operation. But they're also actively engaged in the organic market, and they raise organic vegetables at a massive scale for companies like Walmart and ConAgra and maybe even McDonald's. I'm not 100% sure. And so one of the things we have to remember is that as consumers, when you're buying corporate organic, that you're not necessarily buying from the person that you think you're buying from. You're probably buying from a huge company that has worked to water down the rules legislatively to be able to compete in the organic market. And really, you know, I know farmers markets are getting bigger. They're getting bigger. There's a lot more opportunity out there, but not everybody has that access yet. But if you truly want to cut through the clutter and make sure you're supporting a family farmer, buy directly from the family farmer, whether it's going to the farm gate and buying from the farmer direct or going to a farmer's market and getting to know that person and paying that person your money and cutting out the middleman and talking to that person about how they produce your food. That is the only way that you can be 100% sure that you are buying a product that you think you're buying and that you want to spend your money to buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, sometimes people ask the question, you know, which is more important? Organic. Hello, you're on a line again. Whether you want organic or local, and which is more important. And, you know, I was always, you know, holding tight to organic as being more important. But, you know, I just want to say that if you can talk to the farmer and they're doing it local and they're just not certified organic, but they're doing using sustainable methods and not spraying, then that's certainly a better thing. But if, you know, if someone has a choice of organic or local, but people are spraying local, which would you advocate for?
Well, I think that's a tough question. And probably depends on the situation, right? Like I personally can tell you that I don't just eat organic food, but I do know where my food is produced. And some farmers will spray their fields, but not, you know, to keep out invasive weeds, but not spray the vegetables. And so, you know, and the other thing is that even in organic production, some sprays are allowed. So you have to, you know, you have to do your research, and it's really going to be all about what you, the consumer, feel comfortable with. If you're talking to a farmer and that farmer has an invasive species problem on their farm and they have to spot spray in order to control that invasive species, is that something that you're okay with so that you can have a product that, you know, isn't organic but is able to be produced in your community. So, you know, there's always going to be trade-offs. And the best way to kind of cut through the clutter is to just ask the question of the person that's producing your food and see if you're comfortable with it. And they should, a farmer wants to talk about how they raise their food. And they, and if they don't want to talk about it and they don't want to show you, then maybe you're not buying from the right farmer.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, you have to make those decisions as a consumer.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we're almost out of time, so I just would like to touch on mentoring farmers. I know, Terry, your granddaughter is now on board with this organization that you're so passionate about. Can you talk to us a little bit about the importance of mentoring farmers for the next generation? Because I know we're having a problem getting people to get on board with farming.
Well, I touched on briefly there earlier, you know, the importance of, you know, another generation or the next generation, you know, carrying the torch. But, you know, it's been very special to me. You know, there's been a lot of times over the last 20 years that I've worked on these issues that, you know, I feel like I've neglected a lot of my family members, you know, in traveling and doing what I do. But then to have, you know, my grandchildren, you know, coming back and wanting to be a part of what I've been doing, it's really upholding to me. I mean, I can't express it, but I think it's so important, you know, and like I said earlier, it doesn't have to be a 500-acre farm. It's not the bigger or get better or get out mode. It's you know, connecting with consumers just like they're in New York. You know, finding a farmer, whether it's 5 acres, a lot of vegetables can be grown on that, a few animals, you know, is getting the economy back in this country at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the younger generation, from what I'm seeing, you know, and their attitudes and their concern over this, I think that they're moving forward very well, just like the
passion. I'm with you. I'm very optimistic. I have a lot of hope for this movement to really take hold and turn things around. So before we're out of time, Kendra, you want to just share how people can get in touch with you and the organization?
Absolutely. We are on the web. We're at www.sraproject.org. We're also very active on Facebook. You can also find us on, if you search Social Responsible Agricultural Project on Facebook, we'll come right on up. And then our Twitter handle is at @SRAproject. So we're active online, and we'd love to engage with you and hear your ideas. And so thank you very much for the opportunity to be on the air today.
Thank you. And Terry, Ashlyn, and Kendra, thank you to all of you for joining me today in your busy schedules. It's great. The work you're doing is wonderful. Everyone, you've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Thanks for joining me, and I'll be with you all again next week.